When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I am Blake Harrison and joining me as ever is the wonderful Stuart Whiffin. How are you, mate?
Hello. I'm good, actually. Yeah, not too bad at all. I'm very excited to... I mean, we should say that we're recording the intro just after we've actually recorded the chat. A little peek behind the curtain there at the MMA Fan Podcast. And I can tell you now, listener, you are in for a treat. They really are, aren't they?
They are, yep. We've got a wonderful guest on, fourth-ranked featherweight in the world, talking about potential title shot opportunities, but also talking about his journey into the world of mixed martial arts and the drive that he has and
saving lives.
Saving life, save the life. How to save a life. He literally did save the life. So do you know what? We've teased you enough. We've got title shot aspirations, we've got saving a life, and we've got all the other gubbins that comes with the MMA Fan Podcast chat. Should we just get on with it?
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is Josh Emmett. Josh Emmett, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here. How are you guys?
We're all good. We're all good. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks very much for coming on, Josh. I mean, we usually like to start these chats by just going right back to the beginning and getting to know you a little bit and asking where you grew up and if where you grew up was an area where you felt like it was important to be tough. Was that an early thing for you to have to deal with?
So I grew up in Sacramento, California, and it's not really, you know, I didn't feel like I have to be tough or you know, the area I grew up, I don't have to be tough, but it's just oh, that's a good question. Never kind of thought about it, but it's something that just kind of, I don't know, just, I had an older brother, and then just kind of being the younger brother and stuff like that. And maybe feeling like you have to be tough and, you know, when we would, trying to, you know, look up to him or be like him or, you know, certain things like that. And, you know, I saw how my older brother, he was tough and he was in martial arts and stuff like that. And so I guess, now that you say that, it was, maybe I felt like I needed to be tough, even though I didn't.
Was you comfortable with confrontation as a young man?
I guess a lot of things didn't really, really bother me too much. I felt like I was calm and, confrontation really didn't bother me. I wasn't getting into like fights and stuff at a young age or anything like that, but I wouldn't be uncomfortable, I guess you could say. Yeah. Yeah. Some good questions. Yeah. It's just like thinking about it. No one's ever asked me stuff like that. So, yeah.
Well, no, I always find that stuff fascinating because as I grew up in an area where I did feel like you sort of had to be tough. I grew up in an area of South London that was, you know, it was known for being a bit of a rough area. But I myself, I mean, no way, if confrontation ever happened, I would always get that kind of the butterflies in the stomach. I, you know, I, you know, that people say you've got fight or flight. for me, I found the third one, which was freeze. I didn't know what to do in a confrontational situation at all. And I'm always fascinated by mixed martial artists and whether they were someone. And it's interesting some of the responses we've had, because some people like yourself just seem to be okay with it. They seem to just like, there's a natural, maybe like instinctive thing where you don't panic. But then there's some others that said that they have kind of panicked or been upset as a child if a confrontational situation happened, but they sort of, through, I suppose, martial arts, learn how to deal with those emotions when a confrontational situation arises. So, but yeah, you felt like you instinctively were capable of dealing with it.
Yeah, and I think so. It's just like, you know, it's like growing up, it's like, didn't have the easiest upbringing and stuff like that. And I felt like I was a mediator a lot. And I've had, like, you know, people that would kind of freeze up when something, you know, bad happens or scary happens, like they would freeze up. And I was always the person that was kind of like running towards the fire and going to kind of like help solve it, fix it, or just like lend a helping hand. So I don't know, maybe it's just instinctive for me. Like I felt like, I would always try to, yeah, just kind of to help and not really think things out thoroughly or be like, maybe if I do this, there's going to be consequences or something else. I wouldn't think about like myself. I would just run to help, which was either, who knows, but that's just kind of how I've been brought up and just even when I've done things and had consequences and bad things that happened to me, I'm like, knowing the outcome, I would still do things again. Even though like one time, for instance, it's like in college, I was walking downtown and I looked over and there was this guy getting like beat up, like really bad. He was a big guy too. He was getting beat up and there was two other big guys. They were tonguing, and they were beating these guys up. And without me thinking about it, I ran over there to help this guy. I didn't even know. And I threw this guy off of him. And then this other huge guy is coming at me. I'm going to have to fight him. And then there's like me not knowing there's like four or five guys. And so then I get sucker punched and then they start doing kind of the same thing to me. They jump me and I had to go to I was in like the trauma unit because I had a broken jaw, shattered jaw, had this huge scar on my face. But this guy that I didn't know that I helped, he was in a neck brace. His face was black and blue and bumped up. It looked like someone beat him up with a baseball bat. And the cops came in and they were kind of doing an investigation, trying to find these guys because it was attempted murder. And the cop was saying, if I didn't step in and help, the guy probably would have been dead. But even knowing that, with me going through like broken jaw and all these things, I'd have my jaw wired shut for eight weeks, I would have done it again. You know what I mean? Just because knowing the outcome and that's just who I am. And in my friends, this is when I went away to school. So like my friends from Sacramento, my wrestling team that I was out there wrestling and the coaches, they were pissed at me for like putting myself in a position like that. Like, why would you do that? I'm like, I don't know. I would do it again, even knowing the outcome. So that's just how I was raised. That's how I was brought up. And I don't know. It's just, I'll do what I can, you know.
And so how did you find yourself in your first martial arts gym, and was MMA happening then, or was it a karate class, or how did you sort of get into it, Josh?
Yeah, so I guess martial arts, I first started getting into it when I was, I must have been in, I don't know, middle school, like sixth, seventh grade. I started doing kung fu. Well, the whole thing, like I would have started martial arts at a much younger age. When I was young, my mom, she wanted my older brother and I to, you know, pick a sport that we wanted to do. My older brother picked Taekwondo. And so then I wanted to do that as well. And then, you know, since he was older, he got to decide, but she didn't want us both in Taekwondo because we fought at home all the time and roughed house. And so she's like, you guys will just fight there and then we'd learn more stuff. So then we'd take it home and probably just be doing sparring matches. So since he was older, he got a pick. And so he did that. So my mom said I needed to find something else. And I didn't know. I was like in first grade or something. I was a young kid. So my mom went out and found tumbling. So it was like acrobatic. So I started doing tumbling, like, as a young kid. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I want to go to like karate or taekwondo. But I'm grateful for that because it kind of built this base for me, you know. And then I grew up playing, you know, sports my entire life. But I started doing kung fu when I was, like I said, in middle school. I was always a little guy, a small guy. And going back to like childhood and stuff like that, it's not like the best upbringing. So yeah, I felt kind of like I needed to do something to kind of like, you know, whether it was protect my mom or myself in certain situations. And that's why I got into wrestling in middle school as well.
When you say you were doing like tumbling and stuff, gymnastics, is there any of that that's actually translatable in any way to mixed martial arts? Is there anything that you learned, whether it's a certain aspect of the athleticism, dexterity, anything like that you feel like benefits you now that you're a mixed martial artist?
Yeah, and that's what I felt like. That was the base or the foundation of like my athletic career, just because at a young age, I was doing tumbling. So it's like a lot of balance, a lot of footwork. We were working out. So I remember, like, I have pictures when I was in like second, third grade, like, just, I had a six pack already. Just, you know, I felt like that built the foundation for me. Because you have to be, you look at gymnasts, even though acrobatics is just floor exercises. So that's why it's just tumbling. It wasn't like gymnastics, but you look at any gymnast, they are strong as hell. You know what I mean? So I felt like it built like my strength base, my, like I said, my footwork, my balance. And then that transitioned into every sport that I played. And then when I started wrestling, I feel like it increased that. But I was always, I feel like I was gifted athletically. Like, even though I was a short guy, people probably like, oh, this guy can't do a whole lot. I can play any sport, and I'm really good at it and really coordinated and things like that. So I would pick things up so fast. And I think that did, that's kind of where it all started from.
I wanted to ask you one more thing, Josh, because I feel like we very quickly circled away from the fact that you saved a man's life. And I feel like that needs a little bit more exploration, if you don't mind. Because, I mean, did you ever have any contact after the event with the guy whose life you saved at all?
No, not at all. I don't know. The cop came in, they were looking for these guys that did that to him and myself. And then, you know, at the same spot, like a week later, someone was actually shot and killed outside of that same spot. So I don't know if it was related to the people, or luckily that didn't happen a week prior, you know, but who knows? So,
were you aware of any arrests or anything like that came nothing. From the case?
No, nothing.
Jesus.
Yeah,
amazing. How amazing that you were there.
The only thing that came out, and it's not good, but it was, like, for all like the medical, stuff that I had to go through, since I was like a victim of a violent crime, they kind of took care of that. So that was lucky. So I didn't have, I don't have outstanding medical bills due to that. So,
well, that's another thing. We don't, like, in this country, we have the National Health Service. So we don't, I don't know if you're aware of that, but we don't pay for medical stuff. It's all, you know, you pay your taxes and you get free medical care effectively. So I just, the whole thought of like having to pay for any sort of medical stuff, I think people in this country just sounds like,
and it's crazy because bizarre, I feel like most places too, it's like the US needs to, I wish we had medical insurance. You know, it's like, we have to pay for school. We have to pay for medical insurance, and it's expensive, you know, and we have to pay our taxes. So it's like they're triple dipping.
And extra difficult for you as a fighter. I mean, we'll get onto it in a bit, but you have suffered, unfortunately, a few injuries in your career that stop you from working. But also, I'm assuming, do you have to pay for those medical bills as well? Or do like the UFC cover that? How does that work?
Yeah. Anytime, you get injured in a fight, the UFC covers that expense. So that's good. It's almost like a workers' comp that they have. So yeah, they take care of everything. So which is nice, because even now, like, I don't have medical insurance. Like, I'm only covered when I fight, which is kind of hard, just because it's expensive. You know, like, if my wife and I were to get medical insurance, even just given like our age and stuff, it's not even profession. Like, we're both healthy, but we're, you know, in our mid 30s. It's it would be expensive. It'd probably be like $800 a month or something for a good hospital. You can get some cheap insurance, but then you have to go to these like lousy hospitals. And then still it'd be like $300-$400 a month and we don't use it. So, but we should obviously get something just in case there's like it's there in case there's an accident or some type of emergency, but it's just hard.
But no cover if you're, sorry, Stu, no cover if you're just like training. So during your fight camp in the lead up, do you get covered during that? Or is that if you got an injury during training camp, would that come out of your pocket?
I think it would come out of my pocket, but I think I might be wrong. I think the UFC, they just, whether it was this year or last year, they just started doing something. If something were to happen in camp, I want to say there's a deductible, like a $1,500 deductible, but then they would cover up to a certain amount. And I don't know the dollar amount, but maybe like 50 grand, but which wouldn't be that much, you know, how much like the medical expenses can be. If you're in the hospital or need surgery, they're like way beyond that price threshold, but at least it's something. But I would need to like clarify and, because I don't know exactly.
No, fair enough.
I just want to sort of go back to we spoke about the wrestling and kung fu. Josh, can you tell us about the first sort of amateur fight or the first time you got in an octagon and competed in mixed martial arts? And just tell me about the mental aspect of that for you. You know, the first time you was getting in a cage, I guess it was called then. And how did you deal with that?
Yeah, so my first amateur fight was 2010. I want to say, 2010. It was neat. It was a cool experience. It was different. I was going to go pro because I wrestled like my whole life. I wrestled in junior college at the 4-year level. I was training at Urias in 2005. And then after I got my degree and finished wrestling, I was going to just go pro, but they're like, hey, why don't you just do some amateur fights just to kind of get the nerves out, get the feel of this. Just see how you respond because amateur record doesn't really mean anything. But my whole thought process was, okay, I had my first amateur fight when I was like 26 years old. I was getting in, you know, I was just like, if I lost an amateur fight when my only goal is to fight for the UFC, I was done. You know, obviously if I couldn't beat someone as amateur at that time, I was like, what makes me think I can get in the UFC? So, that's just what I was thinking. That's not what anyone else should do, but it's my opinion. So when I trained for like 2 months and then had an amateur fight. It was not too far. It was like 2 hours from Sacramento. So I got up in the morning, I drove down there, made weight and then had to fight shortly after, you know, like that day. So that it was like same day weigh-in. I was fighting at 155. I didn't really think a whole lot about it just because, you know, I trained at one of the best gyms in the world for MMA for the lighter weights. And so while I was like, before I walked out, I was just warming up and I asked my coaches, I was like, is it bad that I'm not nervous? And they're like, no, that's great. So I just kind of did my thing, walked out to the cage, and it was just like I said, it was a cool experience, kind of different, just because MMA is different, especially when you're coming up. You need like a good management, or you need a good gym that knows the sport, knows the people, things like that. Because in a sense, when it can be shady, people set people up. And I feel like they were trying to do that to me. I was, I was fighting someone that was really green too. It was their first MMA fight, but I guess this guy had previous like kickboxing experience, and he was from a gym, AKA. So the people that were at that particular amateur fight, my first amateur fight, was like Cain Velasquez, it was Josh Koscheck, Phil Brony, John Fitch, the list goes on. And they were all there to watch this guy because that was like their, I don't know, they thought he would do really well and be like the next big thing out of the gym. So, but then again, then you run into someone like me too. So they didn't know who I was. I just had a wrestling background, come from a good gym, Team Alpha Male. So I walk out there, do my thing. I think, oh, I'm going to stand up and just box this guy. But you always go back to your instinct. So it's like, I think the fight started, maybe I got hit with a punch, and then I just, without thinking, I just go right into wrestling, and I'm trying to take this guy down, and I kind of do that, but I end up knocking him out in the second round bad. So it was crazy. Then a fight broke out, and it was nuts, man. It was definitely fun and a good experience. And that kind of how things started, but
was that the same fight where you didn't, isn't that one of your first fights or your first fight, you broke your hand in the first round of the fight and then still won the fight anyway? Was that fight or was that a different fight?
That was my first pro fight. This was my first,
that was your first pro fight.
Yeah. But that fight was different too, because it was, I actually fought in the gym where we train. Uriah had his own, it was called Capital City Fighting Alliance. And so what he would do is, you know, he's a smart businessman. So every now and then they would completely clear out the whole gym, and we had a boxing ring in the center of the gym. And then he would put up chairs basically and pack the place as full as he possibly could. And then he was still charging like $50 a head to get in, and it would sell out. Like every chair was filled out, and then people were standing in the back. And so I got a fight, my first pro fight in the gym I train at in a boxing ring. That's where I broke my hand. It was like the same thing. I took the guy down, and I hit him with like this overhand left and just hit the corner of my hand, like on top of his forehead, and my second metacarpal, so your index finger, it just snapped in half. And probably like 45 seconds into the fight, and I could just feel that bone in my glove just flopping around. It just weird thing. So I went into the, after the first round, I told my coaches, I was like, oh, my hand's broken. And they're like, well, use that right hand you have and take him down, use your elbow. So I did exactly that.
Wonderful.
Wow.
I mean, you spoke about Alpha Male a bit so far, and it was great to see our fellow Brit Corey McKenna get a win at the weekend. And what's the vibe like at the moment in Alpha Male? And tell us a little bit about what a sort of typical day is in Team Alpha Male.
Yeah, no, the vibe is great, man. It's year round. We have, I feel like, some of the most, like, I don't know about other gyms because I haven't gone to a whole lot of other gyms, but just people that come to our gym, whether they're coaches or athletes, they say we have something truly special. Uriah built something special. Like, it's super regimented and scheduled. We have multiple pro practices every single day, 6 days a week. And then we have people, whether they're in the UFC, they're in Bellator, you know, PFL, whatever they are. We have so many people on the mats, and like that's why I say like the best training partners year round. There can be like 15 to 25, 30. I think at one point we had like, just with like UFC fighters, we had like 20 people always on the mat, you know? So it's cool. And that you can pick, depending on who you're fighting, you can really, say like, okay, this person emulates, you know, the opponent that I'm going to fight, you know, with their body stature and their, you know, so we really do have a variety of people to kind of pick and choose from, and that are some of the best fighters in the world. Whereas, you know, some gyms, they have like one UFC fighter or they have like two or three. So we're truly blessed in that sense, but it's always like, yeah, good vibe always. And, people always helping each other out. And then I feel like we have some of the best, you know, coaching staff as well. And, yeah, it's been great to be a part of.
Wonderful.
We got to ask you a few questions about the featherweight division at the moment. I mean, featherweight, first and foremost, is just an absolutely stacked division. I think you're ranked fourth at the moment in the featherweight division, which, I mean, is quite an amazing achievement in itself when you're seeing just the amount of talent coming through at 145. And I think equally at 135 and 155, there's something about those weight categories that are just so unbelievably stacked. And we've got a pretty dominant champion in Alexander Volkanovski at the moment. who's wanting to go up and fight for the lightweight belt. I know he's got an injured hand at the moment, so that won't be happening anytime soon, but he's talking about going up and fighting at lightweight. I suppose there's two schools of thought with that. One would be, look, he's defended the belt like three or four times or whatever. He's looked amazing. Let him go up and fight for the lightweight belt. But the other thing would be, well, he's only beat like, well, he's beaten Korean Zombie, Ortega and Max twice. But he hasn't exactly cleared out the division. There's yourself. There's Yair Rodriguez. You know, there's Arnold Allen. There's a lot of people in that division that are... I've got a case for a title shot. What do you think about Volk going up and fighting at 155?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do you think that's a bit premature, or do you think he's deserved the right, he's earned the right to do that?
Yeah, no, I think he's earned the right. You know, he can kind of look at him. He's one of the pound for pound best. He's in my opinion, the featherweight goat, just because he's undefeated in the UFC. He's beat the legends and the previous goats of the division. You know, he beat Jose Aldo, he beat Max Holloway three times, and then he's beat, you know, really good guys as well, like Ortega, Zombie. So yeah, he definitely, in my opinion, he's earned the right to whether he wants to go up. But we'll kind of see. And like he said, he wants to stay active. He wants to, you know, fight at featherweight and lightweight, but I don't agree that he's cleaned out the division at all. You know, like I'm still right there. I feel like I should be next in line to fight for the title. Just given, you know, I've been beating people most of my career at featherweight. Mostly everyone was in the top 10. They were always on like some 3-4 fight winning streak, the next big thing. And then I fight them, beat them, and then they go on this little skid afterwards. You know, so I feel like I'm next, and I'm pretty sure that will happen, that I will fight for a title, whether it's an interim title or it's the real title. But we have to kind of see how long Volkanovski is going to be out with that hand injury.
So does it, because the other thing that I think even Dana White has mentioned was a potential interim title fight between yourself and Yair Rodriguez. Is that something that would interest you, or do you just want to go for the undisputed belt? You did just mention the interim belt there. So is that something that would excite you and Yair for an interim belt?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Anything, you know what I mean? I've never said no to a fight. So every single time they know my answer, I'll fight whoever I have to get to that end goal. And that is being the undisputed world champion. So whether it's for an interim title, it's just gets me one step closer to accomplishing that that goal of mine.
And how do you feel about Yair's skills? Because, you know, a lot of it very exciting. He's got that really creative way of striking. We saw that with the Korean Zombie knockout, that amazing kind of like upward elbow that he did. How do you feel like your skills match up with Yair if that fight were to happen?
I match up well with anybody. You know, I've been fighting people my entire career that have the same style, you know, pretty much as him. Like I mentioned earlier, I have, you know, a ton of people to pick from in my training room that can emulate his style, you know. And he comes from a Taekwondo background. I think he's elusive with his kicks, you know what I mean? Like, and that's his biggest threat, is his unorthodox kicks. He's fast and he has these crazy kicks. But I fought people like that on the regional scene, whatever. I've been fighting at 55s. I've gone up and fought at 170. So it's like, I'm a bad matchup for anyone in the division. And I'm up for whatever happens. You know, I need the opportunity. And that's all it is, you know, when people are like, I need the opportunity and I'll show the world how good I am.
Wonderful. I noticed that you studied in psychology, Josh. And I just want to know if there's anything you draw from that now on when it, you know, and how does that impact on the mental sort of aspect of what you do for a living? And is it something when you do the, you know, on media day, if there's stare downs and things like that, is there anything from, you know, the psychological side of things where you draw from that? You know, just tell me about how that's impacted on, you know, that part of your life has impacted on your, you know, your career as a mixed martial artist.
Yeah, no, and that's something that I'd like to say that I can kind of like pick up on, even if maybe I'm just, you know, I think these things, but I definitely pick up on people's like, little tendencies that people do, whether the way they say things or like just their body behaves, like their behavior. I feel like I can pick up on things and see if they really do believe what they're saying or, you know, just how they act, you know what I mean? So, not that it matters, but it's just like the little insight that I feel like I have over people and then even just with me, like my own mentality and you know, like what I'm willing to like go through or, to endure in order to win and accomplish my goals. That's why I say I'm not lying when I'm willing to go through anything to get my hand raised. And I've proven it time and time again, and you'll never see me quit or look for a way out in a fight.
I don't know about you, Stu, but I'm now slightly concerned you've been psychoanalyzing me for the whole of this interview. Little eyebrow raise as well. He's been making notes. Oh, no.
We're going to get a therapy bill from Josh in a minute.
Oh, no.
And your invoice
shortly. One of the other things, Josh, that I found quite fascinating, I'm like, you've got a Bachelor of Liberal Arts degree. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
What? I mean, the idiot that I am, what is a liberal arts degree? What is that?
Well, that's pretty famous. So it's like, it was a BA, but it was a concentration in psychology. So that's mainly like most of it was, it was just a, BA.
It's linked to the psychology.
Yeah, it was more, not just a bachelor's in psychology, it was a concentration, but predominantly it was, most of the classes I took were psychology classes.
Was there a moment when, you're studying and you qualify in that, and I know from doing a bit of research, correct me if I'm wrong, that you was looking at a career within law enforcement. Like, at what point was there a conversation or a moment when you was like, do you know what? Like, I'm going to become a mixed martial artist. This is a legit career opportunity now. What can you pinpoint when that was?
Yeah, well, this was like going back to everything. It was all part of my plan. Like, it's two things I always wanted to be, and you know, a lot of people know it's like a pro athlete or a cop. Like I wanted to be a cop so bad since I can remember, since I was a little kid. I was training MMA. Like I said, in 2005, I went into Uriah's gym. I was doing this, and I planned on fighting and going forward with this dream of mine. And I kept getting like, coaches kept calling me to like come wrestle in college and do all these things. At the time I didn't want to go too far from home. So I could have went to the East Coast. I could have went to the Midwest. And Menlo College was just, you know, it was like a 2.5 hour drive away. They had a good, like the school was good as well, as far as academics, just because it's a private college in the Silicon Valley. It was like 2 miles from Stanford. I just figured that I wanted to go down and get my degree, just in case fighting didn't work out for me. But this was all part of the plan. But then I also knew from, if I go and wrestle at a 4-year level, even though it's NAIA, we still dueled and went to all these D1, tournaments and things like that. So it's like my wrestling would get that much better where I could come back and pick up and start fighting, and it would translate really well to that. And so that's exactly what I did. You know, I just went down there. I was down at school for 3 years to the day. I graduated college, got better at wrestling. While I was down there, I was going to some boxing gyms and training with some of my friends that wrestled with, like that I wrestled with on the team, and they already did MMA. So it was just part of my plan. It was just like part of the, just a long process, you know? And then I came back in 2010, went into Uriah's gym again, started training for 2 months, and then had that first amateur fight I was telling you about. Like, and then just, I wanted to fight as consistently as possible, because my only goal was to get in the UFC. Like, I only wanted to fight for the UFC and nothing else. And I got offered to fight in other organizations, but I turned it down because the UFC is the biggest, best platform, in my opinion. And so it took me a long, long time to get there, but it was just me being like persistent and disciplined. And it was a tough road for sure. But yeah, I got there.
I know we're short on time with you, Josh. I know we were sort of running over now, but there's something I'm always interested in asking fighters like yourself that have maybe suffered with injuries or not, because as an actor, the worst thing about being an actor for me is when you're not working. You're not really in control of your destiny. You're waiting for the phone to ring or for people to cast you in something and all that. And when you're not working, it can have a negative impact on your mental health, because you feel like, you know, you're put on this earth to do one thing. It's a thing that you love to do. And as a fighter that's suffered a bit of with injuries, and I know we asked Paddy Pimblett this a while ago as well, because he suffered with injuries a few years ago. How does it affect your mental health when you've got an injury that's preventing you from achieving your goals and doing the thing that you love to do? And are there any ways that you enable yourself to get through any of those dark times if it does affect your mental health?
Yeah, it's it is tough because some of the injuries that I went through, like in the past, they were big injuries too. And you'll see, yeah. I feel like a lot of people have given up after some of the stuff that I've gone through, but it's just like, it's like the resilience that I have. And I'm so like when I want something, I'm obsessed with it. So it's like, I definitely went through some dark times during some of these injuries that I had in the past, but you know, you have a choice too. I feel like it's with anything. It's like, you can sit there, not even if it's an injury, just in anything in life, it's like, you can sit there and dwell on it and be negative and all this stuff. But what does that really accomplish? Maybe it makes those darker times get even darker. So and the feeling that I have, like in my mind, just thinking that, you know, with bones and things, like with time, things will get better and heal. And I truly believe deep down inside, I'm like you said earlier, I feel like I was put on this earth to do great things. And I truly believe that. And I know that no matter what I'm going through, with time, it's going to get better. It'll pass and I'll get right back on track. Maybe I just had to take this little detour, but it's, everything that has happened to me has happened for a reason, because if certain things didn't happen, good or bad, it would have led me to this other way. And I just feel like no matter what, like something bigger and better always comes or always happens for me. Even when I was so upset that this particular thing didn't happen this way that it was supposed to, but then it led me to something bigger and better, like I said. And so I just sit back now and just kind of know that everything's going to be okay. And I'm blessed, and like in some odd way, whatever it is, something's always looking out for me. And, you know, whether you need doors to close for other doors to open. And, you know, no matter what, like, I will be a world champion. I'm like, if I can't get through the door, I'm going through the window. If I can't do that, I'm going to bust through the damn roof, but I will get there. And, yeah, I just gotta be patient and know that it'll happen and just trust the timing and the process. And, that's kind of what I've been doing, and I've been in it for the long haul. Has it happened as fast as I would have liked or predicted, but it'll happen.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You mentioned patience there, and you seem like a really calm and humble human, Josh. Tell me a little bit about that moment when you're in the room before you make the ring walk. We're always fascinated to know what your routine is before you walk out. Like, have you got a process? Do you sit there with your feet up, staying calm, listening to music? Are you hitting pads? Like, what's your routine before you make that walk?
Yeah, I'm always kind of the same thing. I have the same routine that I always do, but no, I'm always super calm and in the moment and in the present. Like, you know, you can, I don't know. I don't get nervous. Like, that's the thing. And I say, I'm not like nervous to go out there and fight. It's, I feel like I've seen a lot of things and gone. So I'm in a controlled environment. It's like, the only thing is, it's just, we don't know what's going to happen. It's like the unknowing. That's what, maybe there's a little anxiety just because, like, you really don't know what's going to happen in there. It's so unpredictable, but yeah, I listen to music. I just kind of like talk, have a good time with my coaches, and then we warm up, and then I put so much work into my training and preparation that like the fight, like after I make weight and then the fight is where I can actually go 100%, because it's like in practice, you know, like I'm not trying to injure my training partners and my teammates and friends. So it's like, you know, I'm not drilling, but when we spar, I'm not going 100%. And because I feel bad if I, you know, hit someone hard or go to the body or do something. So it's like, this is the time where I can actually like let it all go. And like, and I do really well in my camp the entire time. And I push myself to the absolute brink because like, I want to feel tired. Like, you're in a fight, you're going to get tired. I welcome that. So I push myself so hard in training. So I'm prepared for that. If I can even reach that in the actual fight, but I feel like I never do, you know what I mean? Cause I train so hard. So the fight is like the easy part for me. You know, it's like, I'm just like, the more calm you are and like living in the present, but it's actually like it's the only time that I truly feel it like at like peace. It seems kind of weird, but because at that moment when I'm fighting, I'm only thinking about the person in front of me, like about how I'm going to beat him, how I'm going to solve this puzzle, how I'm going to win. I'm not thinking about any like outside factors or anything. Like, I'm not thinking about the mortgage next month or doing this or that. It's like, that's the only time that I can actually really try to, like, I'm in the moment, you know, whereas all this other time we have all this outside stimulus and all this other things that affect not even just us as fighter, but just everybody, you know, we got a lot going on now and we're stimulated in different ways. So it's really the only time I feel like at peace, even though that sounds kind of weird, even though I'm in like this high stress situation, but to me, it's peaceful. It's weird.
Yeah. That's a great answer. Josh, if you don't mind, I'd love to ask you one final question and then let you go. It's quite a big one. There's still large sections of society that see mixed martial arts as a bit of a throwback to a more barbaric time. How I wanted to ask you, kind of, when dealing with conversations with people that have that kind of thought, is there anything that you go to as your reasoning for why you think that mixed martial arts or martial arts in general is actually a beneficial thing for society as a whole?
Yeah, no, I get it. And I do feel like it's barbaric in a sense, just because, like, look at it, you know what I mean? Like, there's people that aren't, like, that don't follow the sport. Like, if you really know what's going on, and like I love it when people are grappling, because I understand it. Like, when people are doing, like, really, like, slick transitions or submissions and stuff like that. But I know a lot of people that aren't so familiar with grappling and wrestling. They're like, oh, stand them up. Like, if you want to just see knockouts, go watch like boxing or kickboxing. But in a sense, where it is in the entertainment, you know, it's entertainment. So that is why I do try to, like, I'm always exciting, and I try to have these big knockouts and these big drug out wars and fights. But it is barbaric for people, like, you know, like a older lady watching this, and or like, say, like my mom, she doesn't like this. My wife doesn't like this, but it's just like what I chose, and they support me. But I think it's good in a sense where, you know, I even have like all my friends, they have younger kids, and like, they're all like, they're fighting each other, and they're like, I'm Josh Emmett, you know? And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, but I'm, but it's kind of, it's 'cause they let them watch it. But I think it's good where it's like any other martial art. Like if you're going to a gym, it teaches discipline. Like obviously, like now the next generation of kids that are fans of the sport MMA, and they're getting into MMA gyms instead of like karate or taekwondo now. And they're going to be just freakish athletes as they get to, you know, be 18 or so, whenever they can compete. And we're already kind of seeing that, but yeah, as long as you use it like in a, like a self-defense, if you ever had to use it that way or to protect someone, like, okay, it's good. But like, as long as they're not going out just to go learn how to fight so they can go pick fights and stuff. But that's where I could say where it's, you know, good for the, you know, it's like as a whole. And even just like some of our godchildren, like we have, like they're in jiu-jitsu, and I think it's great for to teach like self-confidence, and even for like little girls or even women just in general, like self-defense. Like if you know what you're doing in jiu-jitsu, I'll take a small woman that's, you know, a black belt but super slick over someone that doesn't really know a whole lot, like I'll pick her all day, because you can't, technique is something special. That's when, especially like power, athleticism and strength, it only helps to a certain extent. When you're, you know, caught in a choke or your limb is going away, it's not supposed to go. Like, I think it's great for self-defense. And like I said, just even, confidence. Exactly.
Confidence. Yeah. 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 No, I agree. I think it's great. Like my daughter does jiu-jitsu, and I think that her confidence improved, even silly things like posture, stuff like that. I think that's great. And I think it just gives people sometimes that have got not a great deal of either hope or beneficial things going on, it can give them, opportunities in life that they never would have had. And I think that's the wonderful thing about those gyms, and the way that it can bring people together, and discipline that you talked about, and the kind of a friendship circle and the family that you can get from that.
And that's how I think about wrestling. It's like, I, you know, you hear that saying a lot. It's like, once you wrestle, everything else in life is easy. And I do believe that, because wrestling is such a hard, grueling sport. And it's not only the weight cut, but it's like, even a 7-minute wrestling match that I've had in college is tougher than a 25-minute fight that I had 8 weeks ago. Way harder. And I know that it sounds crazy, but it is. There's a reason why people don't wrestle as much in there, because it is hard. It's so much easier to stand up and throw punches and stuff, but wrestling is way tougher than fighting. And I grew up from that, and it's taught me so much, and just like the relationships and like the camaraderie that you've had. It's just kind of like one of a kind, and it's an individual sport, but it's a team sport. It's the same thing with MMA. It's like, I'm the only one going in there doing it, but I would not be there without my coaches, you know? So even though I'm going in there fighting. I'm still thinking about them putting all the work in for me. I'm thinking about my whole team, and not the team alpha male, but like the people that are there supporting me and invested in me and all this type of stuff. Like it's a team sense, but I'm just the one going in there and doing the work. And then after that, it's like we reap the rewards, all of us.
Wonderful. Josh, it's been an absolute pleasure to sit and talk to you and ask you some questions, mate. Thank you so much for your time.
Cool. Thank you, guys. It was fun.
Cheers, man. And apologies for running over. Sorry if we've taken up too much of your day. Thank you so much, mate. It's been a great chat.
We're going to press
Cheers. You guys take care.
There we go. Josh Emmett. What a lovely man.
Lovely man. And, I mean, it's just so... the little wrinkles of things that you get from people's lives, like the whole psychology thing, wanting to be a police officer, the fact that he saved a man's life. I mean, that just things that I never knew about Josh Emmett until chatting to him. And then obviously, you know, the talk about what could come next. I mean, we could have just been interviewing a guy that's the next featherweight champion, whether that be interim or if things work out for him, undisputed. But Josh Emmett is fourth ranked in a really stacked division, and I think he's someone that's very underrated in the UFC. Yeah. I think
he's one of the quiet guys in the top 10, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, he's kind of like an American Arnold Allen in a way. He's like he's one of those ones that's not big on all the chat, but delivers inside the octagon. And at the end of the day, that is the main thing you have to do. It just means that if you're not doing the chat as well, you sometimes have a longer road to those big fights and to the title fights and stuff. So best of luck to Josh on his mission to get a title shot soon.
There's such a weird thing about talking to fighters, and it's when you have these conversations that you realise that they're very different people to me and you. And I think when he said, yeah, you know, like my first fight, it was just really fun. Do you know, it was really neat. Like, who describes like a fight as being neat? Like, he said it was neat, and I just thought, my God. He then said, I mean, I don't know why I'm saying this, because people have just listened to this episode, but he said, you know, like, in 25 minutes when I'm in there, you know, I'm just at peace. Mate, I would not be at peace if I was in an octagon with someone trying to punch my face in.
I'd be in pieces. I'd be falling my eyes out in pieces, probably. Please don't stop it. But
I just thought it was amazing. He's so calm, isn't he? He's such like as we mentioned, he's one of the quiet guys of the division, and I hope that doesn't cost him anything, because you know we've seen, you know, a lot of other fighters talk good games and it's got them fights. And I think where he is in that division now, he's earned that through fighting and not through trash talk, not through, you know, playing the media. He's there on his merits as a mixed martial artist. So it'd be great to see him get that interim or to get the shot at the champ.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, at featherweight is stacked. He's on a 5-fight win streak. As we all know, Arnold Allen's on about a 9-fight win streak at the moment. Yep. But I think Arnold hasn't necessarily fought anyone in like the top five, and Josh Emmett's just beat Calvin Kattar. So
how was that little burp you done there?
That was lovely. I thought I got away with it, but thanks for bringing that up. And then obviously there's Yair Rodriguez in there as well. So look, it's a stacked division. Any one of those three guys, I think, has got a claim to a title shot. You know, I always say when you're on a really long win streak like Arnold Allen, he's got a claim. Josh Emmett Absolutely. Certainly has a claim after beating Calvin Kattar. And Yair Rodriguez is someone that's got a claim as well, although his win over Ortega, that kind of iffy win, Ortega hurt his shoulder a bit. I think an interim title fight between Josh Emmett and either Arnold Allen or Yair Rodriguez, if Volk's out for a long time and then wants to go up and fight the 155-pound champ, makes a lot of sense. But I think Josh Emmett really is the name that should be in there out of those three at the moment. I'd like to see him against Arnold Allen, but
yeah, absolutely. And if you're like a fan of if you're a fan of Arnold, then go check out the back catalogue of this podcast. We spoke to Arnold a couple of times on here. We spoke to Dan Hooker. We've spoken to Volk. We've spoken to the champ as well. So go check them out. They're just a few that have fought in that division recently. And there's a whole host of all your favourite fighters that have been on and had chats with Blake and I. Some talking about upcoming fights, some doing the more long-form career-spanning chats like what we've just had with Josh. The best way that you won't miss out on any of the action that we throw at you is to subscribe. If you subscribe, then it'll just pop up on your listening device each week. You can keep up to speed with everything we've got coming up, everything that we've got out, and all some other bits and pieces in between by following us on the socials. We're on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. And I think I've run out of things to say. Are we done?
I think we're done, mate.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.